Good morning. You are listening to Raven Radio. Today is Friday, March 1st, 2013. I'm Holly Keene, and this is Raven News. Sustainable Sitka has announced its Green Business Award winners for 2013. A total of 26 businesses met with the organization's criteria for green business practices this year, 19 of them at the platinum level. What started out 4 years ago as a publicity project for Sustainable Sitka has turned into a source of pride for some of the businesses who participate. KCAW's Robert Woolsey reports.
Michelle Putz is a first-term member on Sitka's Assembly who was elected last fall on an openly green platform. She helped develop the Green Business Awards in 2009. Putz says she wasn't necessarily trying to create change as much as acknowledge the change that was already happening.
There were businesses out there that were doing good things, and that was really why it came about. We wanted to say thank you for what they were doing, but also what it's led into is sort of a list of best business practices for being green and for supporting community that the other businesses now have, and sometimes they pick up new things that they can do from that list.
The Sitka Global Warming Group and Sustainable Sitka score nominations in six categories: waste reduction, energy conservation, transportation, green materials, green products, and community environmental education. Karen Parker with the Alaska Computer Center says she didn't wait for someone else to nominate her business.
A lot of these are good business practices and good for the environment at the same time. So we said, since we're doing it anyhow, we'll put in the nomination, and we did.
The Alaska Computer Center has won a Sitka Green Business Award at the platinum level for all 4 years. That means they participate in over 15 green business practices. Rob Parker appreciates the expansion in Sitka's recycling program he's seen since 2009.
We collect cardboard, we collect any plastics that we use and so on, and then make a pilgrimage once a week or every other week and go ahead to the recycling place. And as we've done that over the years, I can see that the recycling people have given us more and more alternatives of materials that we can recycle.
Rob and Karen Parker display a Green Business Award certificate at their sales counter. Other than that, there's nothing about the appearance of their business that shouts green. But they believe the program has value beyond just feeling good about the environment.
There are people who specifically, for instance, will bring used ink cartridges back to us because they know we recycle them when they're getting their new ink cartridges. Or people who get a new battery backup because it's more energy efficient than whatever's been going on, and it preserves equipment. So in that way, I would say they're aware of it and they appreciate that we're doing it and they would like to do it themselves.
26 winners is a lot of businesses in Sitka. Even KCAW received a platinum award. The group also gave special recognition to fishermen for their contribution to the local Fish to Schools program. Putz and Sustainable Sitka want to give out even more awards this year in another round in April. For Michelle Putz, the Green Business Awards won't be over until there are no losers.
I would love to have a big event, so like presenting the awards at something very public. That would be a nice next thing.
Reporting in Sitka with help from Holly Keene, I'm Robert Woolsey.
Sustainable Sitka is accepting nominations for the next round of Sitka Green Business Awards through the end of March. For more information on how to nominate an organization, visit our website, kcaw.org. A traditional fishery in southeast Alaska will be closed through April. With the expectation of low fish returns, the Forest Service closed ooligan fishing in the federal waters near Ketchikan. District Ranger Jeff DeFriest has talked to KRBD's Leila Carey, who filed this report.
The federal closure coincides with an Alaska Department of Fish and Game emergency order closing all state waters to subsistence and personal use ooligan fishing. DeFries says that shutting down the fishery yet again is an attempt to help the stocks rebound.
There was a big dive in the population of ooligan a few years ago, and for the last 5 years, I believe it is, we've had closures, temporary closures on ooligans to allow the runs to reestablish themselves.
Any ooligan caught in District 1 during the closure must be returned unharmed to the water. The timing of the closure order is strategic. DeFries says the fish run generally starts in March and lasts through April. The decline in numbers has been dramatic. The ooligan run used to be significant, but then in 2004, only 1,500 pounds were harvested. And it kept getting worse.
In 2010, we actually had fish counts, and I think we were just in the double digits of fish coming back. I think we had something like 21 or 50 fish or something, you know, very small.
DeFries says they didn't have an official fish count after 2010, but observers did see somewhat more than double digits returning. He says there are various theories about why the area ooligan stocks declined so rapidly.
There is discussions about overfishing. There is discussions about changes in the environment. There are discussions about changes in water quality, but nothing, to my knowledge, or to subsistence biologists that I've talked to, has been, you know, quantified as the reason for the, you know, the crash. I understand that, you know, it could be a compilation of the reasons.
The closure is based on the observed runs for the last 2 years, which show it's unlikely a harvestable surplus will return this year. Ooligan have a 5-year life cycle. DeFries says the fish is particularly important to the native community.
It's smoked and eaten as fish, and it's also rendered down for oil, and the ooligan oil is very important to the local native culture as well.
The oil content of ooligan is very high, and the herring-sized fish is also called a candlefish. DeFries says that while he's not observed it himself, he's been told that a dried ooligan can be lit on fire, much like a candle. In Ketchikan, I'm Layla Carey.
The Catholic Church in Wrangell has held its ground through storms, fires, and earthquakes. It is the oldest Catholic church in the state. But the stress of more than a century of continuous use has taken its toll. So the parish decided to give the old building a makeover. KSTK's Shady Grove Oliver walked around the church with its pastor to see the renovations and reconstruction.
St. Rose of Lima was established on May 4, 1879, making it the first Catholic parish in the state. The two buildings that make up the church were built in the first quarter of the 20th century. And it's in a rainforest, where it rains a lot. For a wooden structure more than 100 years old, that means rot, mildew, decay, and flooding. And Father Thomas Weiss, pastor of St. Rose, has seen his share of all of these. We walk down into a narrow space between the two structures that make up the church.
So, in the 1920s, when they built these two buildings, they built this one first as a concrete foundation, and this one's up on pilings. But this has a concrete foundation, a little connector between the two, and so they ended up making a U, U facing uphill, so all the water catches in here.
Father Weiss is also a pastor in Petersburg, but long before that, he was in the Coast Guard, where he learned a lot about engineering. We walk around to the front of the building. At the top of the stairs, he points to a low wall enclosing the entryway to the church. Father Weiss explains they installed 4 inches of insulation and an additional 2 inches of plywood and siding. They had to adjust all of the windows and entryways to compensate for the depth difference. We walk through the large front doors.
One of the ladies said it feels like you're inside a pink Easter egg.
We get inside and the temperature difference is immediately noticeable.
People complain it's like maybe too warm. You know, because they're used to the church being cold. They would just keep all their winter coats on when we came. And now it's a lot better.
He says this new insulation has lifted a huge financial burden from the church.
I got here in September and I looked over the accounts and realized that we were losing our shirt in winter heating bills.
He says first they made the transition from oil heat to an electric boiler system, which cut their costs significantly. They saved even more by installing the thick insulation. He says they're now paying about half of what they had been. I follow him back into a storage room. We climb up a ladder and through a door in the ceiling.
So here we are in the attic. Pretty cool.
It's much colder up here, nearly the same temperature as outside. We walk along a narrow catwalk to the other end of the attic. Father Weiss stops and points up at the crossbeams above our heads.
I first noticed there was something wrong when I was moving some of the insulation around and I found charcoal, like from a fire. And I'm looking around and I'm like, there's nothing burning up here, thankfully, because nobody wants a church fire. And then I looked up and you can see that four of the top edge of the trusses had caught on fire. And so I asked around, and the best story I have is it must have been some embers from when the part of the city burned in the early 50s that caught our roof on fire, so they never replaced them.
We crouch down on the catwalk, and Father Weiss digs under the nearly 12 inches of fiberglass padding on the ground.
But if we dig down, you can look, and you can see the embers underneath the insulation. So you can see how thick this is.
Wow.
And so there's one. So maybe I'll bring some of these ashes down for Ash Wednesday. It would be pretty funny.
As we're walking back outside, he stops one last time to point at the roof.
So my next project is see all those rusty screws. I have to climb up there and replace all the rusty screws with new screws.
That's going to take a long time.
Yeah. Do you like using a drill?
Reporting in Wrangell, I'm Shady Grove Oliver.
Alaskans have a big deadline looming. Eligible Alaskans who want to sign up to receive this year's permanent fund dividend have only until the end of the month to do so. The application process for PFD checks started January 1st and continues through March 31st. People can sign up online or pick up forms at designated distribution centers. Alaskans received checks of $878 in October when the 2012 dividend was paid. The money comes from investment profits from the state's oil wealth savings account. New residents must live in the state for a full calendar year to benefit from the permanent fund, which was established in 1976 after North Slope Oil was discovered. The state began distributing dividend checks in 1982. And that's all for Raven News. If you've missed any of our stories or would like to hear them again, please visit us online at kcaw.org. And now here's a look at Sitka's own weather. It's currently 38 degrees downtown at the Cable House, a little bit of light rain falling. Today, expect rain showers with highs around 44, southeast wind 10 to 20 miles per hour, decreasing to 10 miles per hour late. Tonight, numerous rain showers, lows around 37, southeast wind 5 to 15 miles per hour. Saturday is going to be cloudy, scattered rain showers, highs around 41, east wind 10 miles per hour. And Sunday, increasing clouds, scattered rain showers, highs around 42. KCAW, Sitka.